Welcome to Adoption Talk by Spence Chapin, the podcast where all the voices of the adoption constellation come together. Twice a month, this podcast brings you conversations with adoptees, birth parents, adoptive families, and adoption professionals as they share their experiences and discuss all things adoption. We're glad you've joined us. On today's episode, Adoption Talk welcomes friends Dr. Samantha Coleman and Sandria Washington, who both discovered as adults that they were adopted, and quickly learned that Black adoption is common, but rarely spoken about in private or publicly. In an effort to bring conversations around Black adoption to the forefront, Dr. Sam and Sandria created Black to the Beginning, the Black Adoption Podcast, which places the stories of Black and adopted adults and the Black family at the center. Hear their conversation led by Melissa Minnick, Manager of Communications and Marketing at Spence Chapin and fellow adoptee, as they discuss their personal stories, the history of Black adoption, generational healing, and the critical importance of open conversations around adoption. Let's get started.
Well, again, thank you both for being here today. Much appreciated.
Yes, we are excited to be here.
As a word of introduction here, we have friends Dr. Samantha Coleman and Sandria Washington. So welcome and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
So first question here, how did this all begin? How did Black to the Beginning begin?
So we always get this question. It's the very first question, and it takes us to actually tapping into our personal stories. So in 2006, and this is Dr. Sam, my mother divulged to me that I was adopted. This is at the age of 26. So of course, that was shocking to me, unbelievable, just what is this information that I have received? And the more I talk about it, I never use the word traumatic, right? But when I really think back on it, it was traumatic, you know, information that was provided at that particular point in time. And I remember not knowing what to do with it. So I kind of just took it all in and left from that, you know, lunch with my mother, getting this information and almost having a car accident as the tears began to, you know, roll down, had to, you know, go off to the side of the road. And I remember calling my husband and giving him this information, not wanting to, but having to say something to somebody, but being ashamed about it, embarrassed, you know, about it. But even worse than that, feeling like, well, who have I been, you know, this entire, you know, 26 years of my life. And so I held on to that as a secret, you know, of sorts. One that was a part of my identity, but something that I continued to just kind of like put away. And I would dabble in it and, you know, try and look for things. And I really didn't delve into it. And it wasn't until 2010, Illinois changed its adoption right. So it was essentially allowing for adoptees to gain access to their birth record. So this was like all new policy at that point in time. And I just decided like, hey, let me go ahead and try and get my birth certificate, get some sort of information. Took a couple of years before I received it. And so that, again, like it put me on a little reunion, search and reunions, you know, sort of process. Mm-hmm. And in doing so, like through that journey, coming across, you know, family members, connecting with a few people. And so once that process was complete, so mind you, this is about a decade worth of finding out to getting my birth certificate and then actually connecting with family. It wasn't until that point that I began to divulge to my friend group, like, hey, I'm adopted. Yes, I've known for 10 years. No, I didn't tell you. So sorry, don't think that I don't trust you. It's just that's something that I had to process. And Sandria was a part of my friend group for a long time, you know, at that particular point. So I began to divulge that information. Sandra was one of the first people that I told, and that was in 2016. So it's always at this point that I do the baton toss over to Sandra and how this connects.
Yes, so as Sam mentioned, and as you mentioned in our bio, we've been girlfriends for a really long time. Anybody who knows Samantha knows that she speaks her mind. She is very upfront, very vocal. So at the time where she started to really share this with her friend circle in 2016, it was a little bit surprising, shocking, because this is somebody that we've known all these years and we didn't know this information about her, but she didn't even know that information about her. So, you know, at the time where she shared it with me, I was just completely in shock, like, oh my God, I can't believe this has happened to you. Like, this is crazy. This is the most bananas thing I've ever heard. And, you know, we just kind of went from there. And at that time, I had absolutely no clue, no inkling that I would share a similar story. I pretty much just grew up with my mom, my older brother. I have a brother that's 10 years older than me, and just went about living my regular everyday life. And then in 2017, so a year after Samantha shared her revelation, I get a message from an older cousin of mine, a message through social media. And she basically tells me, I don't know if you know or not, but I wanted to let you know that you are adopted. And she just kind of put it out there. There was no context to it. There was no additional information. It was just this message in my inbox. And so, similar to Samantha, I kind of held it close to the chest and didn't really share with anybody. Bits and pieces I would start to share with people over the coming months, but I really just wanted to take some time to figure out if this was even true. Could it be a possibility that I could be adopted? Because it just seemed so far-fetched. And so it wasn't until 2018, a few months later, where I got the courage to approach one of my aunts and ask her if it was true. I had to go to my aunt because both of my parents are deceased, so I couldn't go back and ask them. And I wasn't really quite ready to ask my brother. So I go to my aunt, she confirms that it's true. And that just started the snowball effect of trying to piece together the truth of my origin, you know. And at that time I was 38 years old. So, you know, the first 38 years of my life, what did that mean? What's the actual true story? And then Samantha and I eventually reconnected around this topic of adoption in 2019. And we didn't really know what we should do, what it could look like. We just knew we had to do something. Nobody was talking about Black adoption, especially not Black adoptees adopted into Black families. And so we knew we wanted to do something. And then that's where we started putting in motion Black to the Beginning and just growing from there.
Wow. Thank you both for sharing all of that. That's a lot. And just to say, I'm adopted. I'm an adoptee, but I'm somebody who's known that my whole life. And that's just always been a part of my story and something that my parents were very open with me about. And I can only imagine what that would be like, just finding that out so late in life and basically having your world rocked in this way.
Yeah, like I still sit and think about it at the most random moments. Like right now I'm at work and I could just be sitting here at my desk and it'll cross my mind like, man, I'm adopted. I just found this out 4 years ago. Like it still kind of catches me off guard because it is one of those things that it's like a record skip, you know, in your daily life. Like, whoa, okay, this is completely different than anything I've known prior to finding out that information.
Mm-hmm. And to your point, Sandria, like for me, it's 15 years at this point, but it still feels fresh sometimes where you're just like, yeah, this is really a part of my story. Like that just happened and it feels like it was yesterday.
Like, you just don't get over it. A lot of people, especially adoptees, whether they're late discovery or not, people will often be like, well, just get over it. Or now that you know, you should be able to just move on, move forward. But it really is something that now this is a part of you. It's always been a part of you. You know, you as an adoptee can relate to that as well. So it's always been a part of you, but it's just not something that you can easily skip over. So it's very much present, especially with the work that we're doing now and the work with the podcast. Like, it's always at the forefront of our thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that something that Dr. Sam said that just really resonated with me and what you were both just saying is very much about how there's often a trauma there. And I think all the more so for what you have both experienced and just finding out late and finding out so much later. I imagine it would feel as though you'd been lied to your whole lives. Or through.
I think that's accurate. That's one of the ways I feel about it sometimes. Mm-hmm. Because you can have a fact of omission, and some people might argue omission isn't a lie. But for me, sometimes, yeah, I do feel like, man, I've been lied to the whole time, or just kind of like this idea of the elephant in the room, and everybody knows it except for me. You know, I'm literally the last person to find out. And so, you know, that trauma, even when you aren't consciously aware of it, it's always been there. And I think about the times that I've gone to therapy in my younger adult years, and I just think about how every time I've sat on a therapist's couch, there would have been no way for them to really fully help me, because there was a critical piece of information that I wasn't able to share with them because nobody shared it with me. And so as I'm working through things and working through different challenges, there was a piece of myself that I couldn't really get to that deeper healing because it was withheld from me. And so I feel like it kind of delayed some things.
And to your point, Sandria, I think this is such an interesting question about whether or not you've been lied to. And it immediately made me think about my mother and whether or not, if you asked her whether or not she lied, her answer would be no. Mm. Because she has stated to me, like, you never asked whether or not you were adopted, right? Or, you know, certain things where she believes that because she did not answer with a lie, so whether or not she, you know, she skated past it or what have you, well, then technically, you know, I haven't lied. And so when I process that, sometimes I'm like, you know what? You didn't lie to me. You lied to yourself.
That part.
For years, and you thought that this information would never come out. Mm-hmm. So technically, you didn't lie to me. You lied to yourself, but the omission is life altering. Mm-hmm.
Thank you for that. I know that on Black to the Beginning, it's often said that it's not just about the Black adoption conversation, but about the Black family conversation. Can you tell us about that?
Well, I think when we talk about adoption, we can't just speak about it in terms of, like, it's just this one concrete topic. Adoption impacts families. Adoption is the manner by which people, you know, create their families, or how they believe that they're creating their families. And the fact of the matter is that Black people, and particularly historically, we have been adopting informally into our families. So we have brought in children that, you know, either belong to somebody else because that's what we had to do, you know, back in historical times, or we have taken on grandchildren, nieces, nephews, what have you, and brought those individuals into our families. But the thing about it is that it's not talked about. So it's like all of a sudden, you're just in this family, you're living where someone's your cousin, you're calling them sister,
or brother, or you're calling your grandmother mom or auntie mom, or, you know, just all these different things that are outside of, I guess, the traditional, like, nuclear sorts of family. And then what often ends up happening is that years down the line, a lot of times this happens, I'm sure across all families, but particularly in Black families, right? Like, we don't hear anything until somebody passes away. And then all of a sudden, all of this, you know, information, you know, comes out. And it's like, oh, I didn't know this and I didn't know that. And again, it ends up rocking people's worlds. And again, it brings on these traumas that people continue to, you know, perpetuate, like, generation after generation. And so we have to be more willing to have these courageous conversations about what's occurring within our families, to normalize what our constellations look like, so that people are not walking around ashamed or gaslit. You know, it's just all of these different things that come into play. Like, we have to discuss the family in order to really, like, get to the crux of adoption.
Is a hashtag that gets used a lot. Mm-hmm. That is very much yours.
Well, funny enough, so in the beginning when we started this work, that hashtag wasn't really being used at all. Mm-hmm. So when you talk about being Black and adopted and what's unique about that, it almost felt like to be a Black adoptee was to be a unicorn, as if we did not exist, at least not in a social media space. So if you did see anything about Black and adopted or Black adoption, it would be in relation to animals, pets, Black dogs. Or in the early days, the couple of instances where that hashtag was used, it was by an Asian family. And so initially it was just this very murky space where it felt like to have those two things coexist just wasn't even possible. When people think about Black adoption, African American adoption, they don't see people like Samantha and myself. They don't see adult adoptees. They think of little babies, and they think of Black babies who are oftentimes adopted into non-Black families. And so this whole idea of being Black and adopted just wasn't equated to, there's a world of Black adoptees who actually exist and who have stories, but you just don't hear, you don't hear those voices. And in the case of situations such as mine and as Samantha's, where we were adopted into Black families, if you did hear stories of Black adoptees, it was often Black transracial adoptees. And so we just felt like we were in a very unique space where, where was the community around Black adoptees in same race families? Where were the voices of other Black adoptees who found out later in life, who are late discovery? And so all of those things just made it feel very unique. You know, again, going back to the point of nobody's talking about this. We know it happens. We know our families do it. We know it's common, but there's no conversation around it, especially in the larger general adoption conversation. There just wasn't a place for it.
Mm-hmm. Have you found that it's, I guess to me, it seems like it might follow some of the trends along with the different generations, like older generations feeling more stigma and just kind of a more natural aversion to even discussing, mentioning adoption, versus like some of the younger generations that are much more open to that. And I'm wondering if that's kind of what you've seen.
It's interesting, and Sam, I'll let you jump in on this too, but I think for me, you know, we know generationally there are some differences about who's comfortable sharing what. And especially in Black families, we're very aware that there's often the gatekeepers. Who are the people that keep the families, not just their history, but also the family secrets. Mm-hmm. So that's often maybe a grandmother or an older aunt and an older uncle. And so a lot of times you're raised with this idea of, what happens in this house stays in this house, don't air dirty laundry, or we just don't talk about certain things because that's just how it is. We're not looking for a badge of honor because we've taken in a family member's child or we've adopted a child. This is family now. There's no distinction about whether that child was adopted or not or came from elsewhere. Family is just family. And so we may not always talk about things in the terms of adoption, but even when you think about younger generations, so we're children of the late 70s, early 80s, even we are not always as vocal because there wasn't space to be vocal. Nobody was talking about Black adoption. So even in this present age, we're really just coming in at a time where people are actively talking about this. But I promise you, before 2019, that was not the case. So mm-hmm. to be here in 2022, and now you have people across generations. So you have people, older adoptees, you have birth parents, birth moms who are just now getting to the point where they feel comfortable to share their stories because now there's a space to do it. Now there are other people, and it's not just the work that Samantha and I are doing, but there's other groups of people who are saying, it's okay to talk about this. Let's all collectively work together to decrease some of this stigma and some of this shame.
I would agree there. I think the question also brought to mind for me some conversations that we've had over closed versus open adoptions. So, you know, those who are older tend to have been in that, you know, space where the adoptions were closed. So like it was, you know, set up that way for it to be a secret, period. Like no one was talking about it. I often have that conversation with my mother, and she talks about like even the attorney saying like, don't turn over the paperwork, like you're not supposed to see that, you know, information. So it was deliberately meant to be a secret, right? Or for some might think that this is the protection of the birth mother. It allows for that family to move on as if this never occurred. Now, when we talk about this younger generation, or even people that were in open adoptions, I struggle with that too, because just because you have agreed to openness doesn't mean that you've always been open to the conversation. Mm-hmm. So you can tell somebody something, but again, you still have that opportunity as a parent to omit information or to decide, I told you that you're adopted, we're not going to have any more conversation, you know, around it. And so for even those open adoption situations, I often wonder, even for younger generations, like how much of that shame and the stigma and the secrecy, like around even having that information, still does not have you in a place where you feel empowered to even say, I'm Black and adopted. Right? So I think that it's important to also think about like the manner in which you were adopted and how quote unquote open your adoptive parents have been to ensuring that those conversations continue so that you can feel, I won't say okay, but at least have some sense of comfort in your adoptee status and to be able to talk about it freely with anyone who approached you about it.
Thank you. Since 2019, you really see a lot more almost like identity being claimed in this. And I don't want to use the term pride. That would be maybe stretching it too far. But some might say that they're proud to be an adoptee, that to take some ownership over that, but like identity, ownership, but like really owning this term.
Yeah. And there's definitely more of that going on. And maybe in some cases, pride could be inappropriate word to use. Like we have black and adopted hoodies, you know, and mm-hmm. I know when I put it on, I'm able to do so without feeling shame. Like I want people to take a double take or ask me about it. And I think the pride isn't necessarily in being an adoptee, but the pride really is in being comfortable and being okay to acknowledge publicly that I am indeed Black and adopted. And this whole idea of ownership and owning your story, healing, something that we often say on our platform is changing the narrator. You know, people will often say change the narrative, but how do you change a narrative? You really have to look at who's telling our stories. Mm-hmm. Most of the stories we've heard about Black adoptees and Black adoption have not come from the actual adoptees because, again, they're little babies, they're children. So now that you have adult adoptees who are feeling more empowered within themselves to actually use their voice and take ownership of their story, now we can speak for ourselves. And so I think just that's where the pride is. And it's been beautiful to witness and even experience. Like, man, we don't have to hold this in. Samantha held this in, you know, for 10 years. It's like, we can talk about it freely now. And as we're able to share, now we're helping other people feel more comfortable to share their truth and own their stories.
I think that's a beautiful thing. I think it's really awesome. Awesome work that you're both doing.
Thank you. We never thought we'd be doing this work. So thank you.
Well, thank you.
We could have never imagined in a million years.
Encouraging everybody out there to definitely listen to your podcast.
Yes, thank you.
So getting to that, I was going to say, on your podcast, you have discussed a wide range of subjects, and I love all the guest speakers that you have on there. And you have a wide range of subjects within the Black community, from Black women's infertility and the presentation of their options to the stigmatization that can come from adopting outside of one's biological family, or, as you put it, blood ties. What have you found is unique to the Black adoption community that maybe you wouldn't find in the rest of the adoption community? Maybe some of our other listeners wouldn't expect or be a little surprising.
I think it goes back, honestly, to thinking about our hashtag, right? Of using like Black and adopted. And we had a campaign, let's say was it November 2020?
2020, yeah.
November 2020. And we talked about being Black first, because ultimately no one can tell your adoption status, but being Black is very visible, you know, to the naked eye. It's just, it's a part of identity. And when you think about like adoption, you're already like, just as adoptees across the board, no matter what race you are, you're typically, at least from what we've, you know, heard from our guests and even for ourselves, you come up against similar issues, right? So whether it be issues around identity or experiences that you've had with search and reunion, so on and so forth, like some of these things are like common threads. When we think about Black people, period, right? That's a whole other set of issues that other folks, particularly white people, do not have to deal with. So when you go to do like your 23andMe, right? This is not just about finding potential relatives, but for Black people in particular, this is even about determining like, okay, you know, am I from Africa, right? If so, from what part of Africa? If I have European blood in me, dealing with like, well, how much European blood,
you know, do I have? Because that amount of blood for you is also a reminder of what has happened in the past, you know, to your ancestors. There is a cutoff of culture that Black people have to deal with, period, whether or not you're adopted or not. So when you have all of that to deal with, you know, coupled with a lot of the societal factors that African-American people are continuously contending with, and then you add that with adoption, now you're just like, it's stirring a different pot. And, you know, identity means so much more to you, right? And it might be some Black people that, you know, beg to differ, but for me at least, it means so much more being Black and adopted, where it's like, for real, what is my identity? Because again, I can be on 23andMe and see all of this information about where, you know, I've, you know, come from as it relates to Africa, but still not have a family tree. That family tree could still be empty, right? But I know all this information culturally now. And even then, it's still not like, well, what tribe did I come from? What, you know, like there's this like this connect where with other cultures, you at least have a connection to your culture on some base level. And, you know, and that might be presumptuous, you know, others might disagree, but that's what I feel is very nuanced about being Black and adopted and how that impacts the Black community and just what it is that we experience.
How are you hoping that, I guess, with all of this, do you have specific ideas or ways that you hope to impact the larger adoption community?
We have tons of ideas.
Please share.
Yes. And I mean, some of it is hope, but some of it is already actually happening. I think a big thing for us, we wanted to put this conversation in the forefront, actually have it happen, make it a real thing. And so we're seeing the fruits of stepping out on that. So all of the conversations that we've had with various podcast guests and relationships and connections we've been able to nurture through social media, like we're seeing kind of that ripple from a pebble thrown into the water. We're seeing it in real time. But I think for the larger hopes, you know, there's other things that we would love to see happen where it comes to access to records, because there's still a lot of states where adoptees cannot get their records or can't get enough information to really push their search forward. There are things that we would love to see happen universally across the healthcare system. You know, it should be standard where every healthcare form, you have to fill out your family health history. But if you're an adoptee, you don't know that. There should be a place on forms just across the board that will say, are you an adopted? Are you an adoptee? Are you adopted? Yes or no? Because that informs, or at least it should inform, the care that you receive. You know, maybe there's more tests that you need to do, or maybe your doctor will approach your treatment plan in a different way, knowing that information. And so those are things that we would love to see just on a more broader, long-term level. But I think in the immediate meantime, just being able to have this conversation and actually have people be tuned into it now, like people are genuinely interested in hearing about Black adoption.
Thank you. What do you see as the most pressing issues for this coming year?
I would say, first I want to start with what I've been personally pleased with as we've been, you know, listening to our fellow Black adoptees. And I can't think of, I'm sure there's somebody, but I feel like the majority of these individuals, when they're sharing their stories, they've been very transparent about the fact that they have been seeking therapy or that they have been engaging in other healing practices in order to mitigate their trauma, if you will. And so for me, I think what is extremely important to just even thinking about my own personal, you know, story and having even conversations with my siblings and just thinking about how a lot of the traumas that I experienced are generational. And I think that that a lot of times is a common thread with Black people. There's generational, you know, trauma that has occurred. And I just think that it is crucial at this point to get super serious about your healing and what that looks like. And just being very intentional about how you're going to express yourself, what boundaries you're going to put in place, what you will do, what you won't do. I think it's something that I'm personally, you know, journeying with as well. And I think for the Black adoption community, like, nothing is more important at this point than to, as we like to say, hashtag be healing. Like, this is a necessity in order to, like, it's almost like we can't even have the right conversation if we haven't committed, you know, to healing. So for me, I think that is extremely crucial within the Black adoption community for this year and moving forward.
And I completely 100% agree with that. I would say the collective healing of Black people, everything that we're experiencing now with the pandemic and economics, just anything that we're experiencing as a society, it is magnified when you are Black. And if you add adoption to that piece, that's just another layer where all of these things are exasperating. The level of pain or hardship or challenge that you might be experiencing just by the fact of us being Black in America. And so healing really is, it's not something that society or that our country has really prioritized for Black people. For us, it's always been about surviving and our survival, our personal survival, the survival of our families, our collective survival. And so this idea, even getting more Black people to think about and concentrate on healing, that's going to be crucial because nobody is going to give us the permission to do it. We have to do it ourselves. We have to be the ones to say rest is okay, exercise is okay, our mental health and mental wellness is a priority. And so, yeah, healing has to be paramount. So I totally agree. 2022 and beyond, I really do think collective healing for Black people and within the Black adoption space is top of the list.
Thank you for that. Do you have any specific recommendations you would give for, I guess, different members of the adoption constellation, birth families, adoptive families, adoptees?
First and foremost, I start with listen to adoptees, like really listen to adult adoptees. Because we have a lot that we want to say. We have a lot of perspective that people just have not heard or haven't taken the time to hear. So I would definitely offer that as a suggestion. The secrecy piece is super huge with me. And so for anyone who's listening, I would just encourage either current adoptive parents or hopeful adoptive parents to just really be intentional about how you're discussing adoption within your family, within your friend group, and with your child. Honesty is so key. And of course, I'm biased as a late discovery adoptee. I am super, super biased, and I recognize that. But, you know, having the space for these open conversations, I think in the long run, does everybody good. So it's not just impacting the child, but really that openness and honesty is for the parents as well, for their own healing. And so I would just encourage more open and vulnerable conversations. Of course, listen to the podcast. I think we've done a really, really good job of presenting various viewpoints. So everybody doesn't have an experience like myself or like Sam. There's just different experiences, and people get to hear that, and they get to either hear something that resonates with their experience, or they get to hear something that's completely different from their experience. But at the end of the day, you're going to learn. And I feel like that's what helps not only push this conversation forward, but it pushes the culture forward. We get to have a better understanding of different people. So even if adoption isn't a part of your immediate life, so you're not an adoptee, you're not an adoptive parent, you're not in a relationship with an adoptee, you're not thinking about adoption, but hearing these stories brings you into that conversation and just helps you have more compassion for people. When you hear the stories and the things that people have lived through, it is mind-blowing. And it just does us all a great deal of good to have more compassion, because you have no idea what people are truly dealing with on a day-to-day basis.
And just to piggyback off of some of what Sandria stated, particularly around listening, I would just take it an inch further and say, like, listen to understand, because sometimes people think like they're listening, but we aren't always listening to understand, you know, where somebody is coming from. And I think that for members of the constellation, and to Sandra's point, like whether you are already an adoptive parent or you're a hopeful, or even for birth parents, it's important to acknowledge that this is going to be lifelong. So like even with agencies that are working with birth mothers, and again, I haven't been in that space, I don't know what the conversations are, but for any agencies listening, it's crucial for birth mothers to understand this is lifelong. So while you thought you might have given this child up at whatever age and that story is done, that's inaccurate. It is going to come back around to you at some point. I often think about, like, every time my birthday rolls around, does she think about it? I'm going to go with you have to, because that in itself is a traumatic event. And so how are agencies thinking about their preparation of birth mothers for adoptive parents? It's already enough being a parent, right? But again, when you're talking about adopting a child, you're going to have to go through everything that they experience. When it's time for them to, well, one, even before that, like those identity pieces, but then if they want to engage in a search and reunion. So yeah, it might seem like, oh, that's probably going to happen around 18, 19. For some of our guests, it's like, no, I haven't even touched that until I'm grown. And if a parent is still alive, like, are they going to support that? Or are they going to act again as if that isn't an important part of their child's life, even though they're an adult?
I think the other piece about acknowledgement that Sandria touched on, you know, early in our conversation is like when you see us, you see the adults, but you cannot forget that we were all babies with no choice. So when all of this happens, so no matter how boisterous we might be or how we can stand up and talk about this now, we were all in helpless positions. There was nothing that any of us could have done at that particular point in time. The decision was made. Acknowledge that. That decision may not have been, you know, placed upon your life, but it was certainly placed upon ours. If you cannot have compassion, you know, for that, I would challenge somebody to really dig deep. You have to dig deep if you don't have any compassion, you know, for that. But then once we get to that place, again, we need to keep having those conversations because it's not just about the adoptee, right? Like it's all these entangled stories. But if the walls are up and we're like, no, I'm not going to talk about it. No, we're going to keep that a secret. Or no, you know, we're not going to acknowledge that this was a traumatic event. Well, then guess what? We don't make any movement. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's about acknowledgement and then listening to understand.
That is very powerful, both of you. Thank you for those words. Is there anything else that you'd like to add?
Open floor.
Open floor.
Yeah, I mean, we've touched on it a few times, but I think just driving home this point that this conversation, this adoption conversation, Black adoption conversation, really is beyond what people consider the typical adoption constellation. So this is a conversation, when we talk about larger Black family, this is a conversation with spouses, with friends, with coworkers, because trust me, if you're having issues with your self-worth or your identity, that shows up everywhere. Everywhere you are, it is. So if you are an adopted person or you are a birth parent, it's still with you. And so it affects every aspect of your world, your participation in church, your job, your relationships, your friendships. So just driving home the point to people that this really is a conversation bigger than just adoptee, adoptive parents, birth parents. Like this really affects anybody that is connected in some way to adoption. And we're just, I guess we can just speak a little bit to the future. We're just excited about continuing to do this work and keep the conversation moving forward. You know, how do we do that in different ways? How can we make more impact? Something that I think about often and that kind of drives me personally is this idea of creating a legacy, creating content for people who don't even know that they need it yet. So I think about Samantha being 26 and finding this out. I think about who I was April 2nd, 2018, when I found out and not finding any resources, not finding community, not finding people who I felt could relate to what I was going through. And so I constantly think about, I am creating content for people who are coming behind us, who are gonna have a very similar situation as us. I don't believe we're the last generation or group of late discovery adoptees. I believe more will come to the forefront. And when they do, they are going to find what we created. And to me, that just makes me so excited and hopeful because it's a hard fall when you find out information like that and there's nothing to catch you. There's no community, there's no resources or books or anything that you know that can help walk you through this process. And so the idea that we get to create something that somebody who really, really needs it, they're gonna find it at the moment that they need it. That just, that's one of the things that fuels me.
I love that. Just that idea. You're creating resources for people who don't know they don't even need it yet.
Yeah.
I think something else that I'm excited about, or at least hopeful for, when it comes to this work, especially as someone who was a licensed therapist for years. And I often talk to Sandra about, you know, going through a master's program, and there was never, ever a conversation around adoption, period. The majority of my career was within children and adolescents. And even when I found out I was adopted, I was like, oh, the same organizations that I've been working with is one of the same ones that I was, you know, adopted from. So how crazy is that? But I think also too, I would hope that there are other organizations listening. And when we talk about like the Black adoption experience, that it's taken more seriously, that even though the numbers of like Black adoptive families are smaller than those of our white counterparts, we still do adopt. And so I think it's important to be like, okay, this is a whole other ball of wax, you know, that Black adoptees are dealing with. I think it's also important also for foster care agencies as well, that a lot of times we just focus on being like kinship care, right? But we really don't talk about like, hey, you know, you're adopting someone into your family and that person is in fact an adoptee. So if they're not with their biological parents, they've been adopted. So we have to have that conversation. You know, so like there's a whole like missing or gaps in the way we're talking about Black adoption that I'm hoping our platform and our work will bring to the forefront. And I would definitely like to see more of our Black social workers and therapists be adoption competent, because again, there aren't many adoption competent therapists out there just anyway.
Period, right. Period. Any nationality, yeah.
Of any nationality. So when it comes to like the nuances of being Black and adopted, I would hope that our work is going to expand the competencies of our clinicians and the organizations that will work with them.
Great. Well, thank you for that.
Thank you.
Well, and so what's the best way to, for our listeners to listen to the Black Adoption Podcast and to follow Black to the Beginning?
Yes. So you can find the Black Adoption Podcast on all major streaming platforms. So whether it's your Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, we're on Amazon Music and Audible, Spotify. So all of the major platforms. If you go to our Instagram or our Facebook, you can also get links directly to the podcast from there, as well as to our website, other interviews, et cetera, et cetera. But if you type in Black to the Beginning, that is the best way to find us.
Excellent. And you are at blacktothebeginning.com, correct?
Yes, blacktothebeginning.com, on Instagram at blacktothebeginning_ on Facebook at blacktothebeginning. Yes.
You are all over the place, which yes. I think is a very good thing.
Yes, and we're on YouTube. I almost forgot the YouTube. So yes, you can find us there as well.
Awesome. Well, Dr. Sam, Sandra, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Adoption Talk. If you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to subscribe and leave us a rating wherever you get your podcasts. You can also head to spence-chapin.org/adoptiontalk to leave feedback, suggest episode topics, and sign up for updates on the latest episodes. See you next time.